The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
Committee for Geelong CEO Jennifer Cromarty is on the line. Jennifer, good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, and you're right, it is very cold this morning. So I think when you were talking about the masks, I thought I'll just add that my husband was thinking that maybe a balaclava would be in order and you could just keep warm as well as have your face covering.
That's right. Kill two birds with one stone in a way.
Yes.
But how are you feeling? How's the committee feeling when you look at where we are now, which it is a sense that we haven't really achieved a great deal in the last 20 weeks. We've been in lockdown, this radio station, for the last 20 weeks, and now we're going into almost the same position that we were in 20 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I actually wrote an opinion piece for the Geelong Addy, I think it might have been about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, about finding hope in crisis. And I think when we're starting to look at, well, how do we live through this, work through this, how can we plan for recovery? I think when things keep changing, it's very difficult to plan, and equally on our psychology and on our mental health. And I think that, yes, you're right, it seems like it's been a while and now we seem to be going back to where we were. I think what's really important is we all keep connecting, we keep talking, we keep supporting people who've been hit really hard. I mean, you know, the Committee for Geelong isn't one of those businesses or organisations that's been forced to shut. We've been working from home since March, so for us it sort of feels like it hasn't changed too much. But, for example, when people now have to homeschool their children, it just dramatically affects the ability for them to either do the work that they're doing and how do they actually find some sort of balance. So, yes, it's going to be hard on so many people. So all we can do really is support each other and keep supporting each other.
Well, I was thinking about the last lockdown and how we were feeling going into it, and I think people were more positive about, oh, well, we'll just have to stay home and watch Netflix and maybe learn how to bake sourdough bread and it'll be right, whereas I think this time around people are a lot more reluctant and even feeling down, and it is hard perhaps to find the positives.
Yeah, it's, again, in this opinion piece I started talking about stoicism as a way of life, which isn't probably what people think it is. It's really about saying, let's look at what we can control, you know. There are some things in life we can't control and there are things that we can, and I think it's going to be one of those journeys where, you know, these things are made, these decisions are made without a lot of notice. So I think people firstly have to deal with the, oh, you know, I wasn't prepared for this, now I need to, you know, prepare, and hopefully people aren't going out there and stripping the shelves in the supermarkets as they did the first time around, because we actually have incredibly strong supply chains here in Australia for, you know, the essentials that we need. But, you know, I just think, well, you know, if this is what we have to do, which I totally agree that we do, and obviously I think most people are aware of potentially why this has happened, I suppose one thing we could be grateful for is that we are still living in regional Victoria at this stage, where still not as restricted, obviously, as our close friends in Melbourne, but we know a lot of people who are in Melbourne. And honestly, I just really feel for all the people in Melbourne who, for example, you know, how unheard of is it for us to have a society where people aren't allowed to leave their homes after 8 o'clock at night? You know, it's really hard to get your head around these sorts of things, but I believe it's what we have to do. And as I said, if you take this view that there are things we control and things that we can't control, we just have to keep thinking about other people in this circumstance. And it is really difficult.
In terms of the panic buying yesterday, I don't know if the Premier really filled me with a lot of confidence listening to him speaking. He said, we can't guarantee that you'll be able to get everything you want, but you'll be able to get what you need. And I think in the minds of some people, like, well, we better run out and get all that meat stuff that we actually like rather than having to buy cuts of meat that we don't like. So it's just hard with the consumer psychology. Panic buying fuels more panic buying, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think that there's issues obviously around, I think they're restricting some elements of abattoirs, and I know that we've got some COVID cases within chicken, you know, produce places here in Geelong, which, you know, has affected supply already. So no, I think it's a bit of a lose-lose in the sense that if you say anything about this sort of behaviour or what might or might not be available, it does create panic in certain people's minds. But you know, look, people may not want to hear this, but I think one of the things that I think is really going to be a dramatic change in our society is the way that we think about what we eat, how we eat, you know, what we buy, where we buy it from. These things are going to have dramatic changes to the way that we consume in the future. And I remember in the first lockdown, and I'm sure this has happened to other people, where you've gone and maybe what you want isn't there, so you buy something different, and that maybe changes the way that you eat. It might be that we're a bit more vegetarian moving forward, you know, because there's actually less option and you find that it's actually not that bad. And there are some incredible benefits in terms of, you know, living a bit lighter on the land.
Yes. It's a tough sell for some people to say you're going vegetarian for 6 weeks. But anyway.
Well, I'm not saying everyone does that. I'm just saying that it'll be interesting to see what happens at the end of this and in terms of what habits stick, if that makes sense, because that's going to transform the way that we not just buy, but, you know, where we work. We talked about this last time, you know, the working from home.
Yes.
You know, people, as you said, people baking and, you know, people growing more food at home. There's actually going to be some significant changes, I think, in terms of how people see their ability to be self-sufficient and maybe live slightly differently. So it's the sort of thing we do need to monitor and think about, you know, as we look at policy shifts or things that we're going to fund or not fund from a government perspective moving forward. So they're the sorts of things that would be really interesting to get a handle on, and we are trying to do a bit of research, not so much on the consumer behaviours, but just in terms of what the long-term impacts might be on our economy, of course.
And what about businesses? What do businesses need? Because we've got the situation they're in now, but also there's question marks over what the recovery might look like. We spoke to the tourism industry yesterday, and they said it's going to take a long time for us to actually get out of these restrictions. It's not like after 6 weeks everything's back to normal. It's usually a stage phase in again of business, and therefore the time it's going to take for businesses to be able to run at full steam, it'll be a while. The Premier yesterday announced, I think, another $5,000 payment to businesses. I'm not sure how widely that extends and whether that's just for Melbourne or whether Geelong's included, but what government policies do we need to try and make the best of the situation, given that businesses will be doing extremely tough?
It's a big question, Mitchell. I mean, when we look at what the government's doing, obviously they're shoring up JobKeeper, you know, the changes to JobSeeker. I think they'll obviously look and have looked at Victoria as a special case and Melbourne as a different special case. So I'm not 100% sure either about, you know, the 5,000 and where it goes. But I think if you shut down, there will be supports for you. I mean, the government isn't going to be shutting down businesses mandatorily and not providing extra supports. But if we think about the ongoing support that's needed, and you mentioned tourism, and I'll whack in there, you know, the businesses in tourism, accommodation, you know, food, restaurants, you know, catering, events. Now, we've got members at the Committee for Geelong who are very squarely in this sector, and I've actually spoken to a few of them the last week because I wanted to see how they were going. They are adjusting their businesses accordingly. My understanding is there aren't any that I've spoken to, and we don't have, obviously, the full range of businesses that, say, other organisations do have in Geelong, you know, maybe the smaller tourism, you know, sole trader or mum and dad businesses, but they believe they will be getting through this. And when you say what supports do we need, and it might be as simple as people here in Geelong, if there are businesses that you are absolutely so loyal to and would never want to see fail, we've got to work out a way that we can support them now. And you'll know, we'll go back into the takeaway kind of situation with restaurants. So continue supporting those businesses. Continue helping those businesses that you want to see in the world that you want to live in when we come out of this. And I wrote about that again recently too. You know, let's really think about what we can do to support local. And I think those habits, as you know, when we're talking about consumer habits, those habits are ones that would be great to see that we continue, because the more that we can localise our behaviour and really work with the people that we know and the businesses that we love, it's only going to help them get through this. So it is about government, and government will continue to support. But think about what we can do as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And supporting businesses so that they are still around in 6 weeks' time is a big one. Although I was talking to a few people that had that sort of attitude, but at the same time they think about all the businesses they want to stay around. You can't support them all. You could almost eat somewhere different for breakfast, lunch and dinner every day and still not scratch the surface of the number of businesses that we have here in Geelong. So it's tough.
Well, it is tough, but I'd say whatever you can do will help. And obviously, if everyone does it, I'm sure that we'll see a lot more businesses having the support they need. So don't feel overwhelmed by that, but do what you can within reason and just really focus on it. It can be just, you know, ordering clothes or books or all sorts of things that you might want to do via online. So I think it's just saying within the realm of what you can do, think about those businesses that you care about. Think about the people, obviously, and look after each other. And hopefully at the end of all of this, and when you say how long it might take for some of these businesses, obviously some can open pretty well straight away.
Yes.
I think it'll be about us again as a community then supporting those businesses as they come out of whatever lockdown they might have been in and how we stage that and what we do. But, I mean, it will take a long time, particularly businesses that are in tourism that rely on international tourism. You know, it might be several years before things actually even look like coming back to normal. And so in that period, it's about us then supporting us throughout Australia, domestic tourism. And I suppose we look with some sort of, I don't know what the word would be, I don't want to say I'm jealous of some of the other states who have a bit more freedom, but we look at those parts of the economy and they're the ones who are really going to help us over the long term. As they open up more and more, those businesses will start helping our economy nationally, and the rest of the country really is trying to support Victoria. It's a very unusual situation.
So. Is there some, and I was talking to the tourism people about this yesterday, is there some glimmer of hope perhaps that people are starting to look more localised, because who knows when state borders will reopen again, so people are maybe saying, well, winter time can be nice on the Murray River, or we might go down the Surf Coast, or you know, go and look at the 12 Apostles. Are people starting to look in their own backyard? Is that a glimmer of hope, some positivity for those tourism operators?
Yeah, it is. And I know Brett Ince, who is the Executive Director of Tourism Greater Geelong and the Ballarine, he's acting in the position of Brett Luxford, who's just left now. But when I was speaking to Brett Ince, that's exactly what they're doing. And Tourism Greater Geelong and the Ballarine have launched a domestic tourism brand, a soft launch about a week ago, which is basically doing that, which is saying, what are the things that we can do to explore in our own region? How can we support the businesses locally? And I think people sort of forget that tourism isn't just about international. It's certainly not just about interstate. Tourism is when you actually drive a couple of hours down the road and visit a winery, you know, because that is tourism in and of itself. So it's about how do we as a community from a domestic point of view position ourselves. So that was Brett Ince sort of saying, well, if we have a really clear and articulate brand that we can then promote, hopefully, because Melbourne is a big market for Geelong, hopefully when Melbourne is opened again, but yes, across the whole state. So they're doing a lot of work to make sure we're strategically positioned.
So to change tack slightly, gateway cities is something we've spoken with you and your predecessor a fair bit about in the past, but a new report has come out and it's called the City Report, and it looks at a number of different indicators. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the City Report came out, it was a few weeks ago now, but the author, Rob Tyson, is coming to talk to the Committee for Geelong today, actually on our member weekly Zoom. So we have Zooms every week and we try and bring in speakers, local speakers. But the report, the City Report, talks about Goldilocks cities. So it got my attention because if people aren't aware, the concept of a gateway city is there's an alliance that Geelong, Newcastle and Wollongong councils have formed with the Committee for Geelong supporting that work. And what we're saying is outside of metropolitan capitals, these three cities form an incredibly important function from an economic perspective, from a socially and cultural perspective. And as gateways, you know, ports, airports, they have all this infrastructure that a lot of other regional towns obviously don't have. So when the City Report came out, they talked about this concept of Goldilocks cities. And basically, if you think about the story of Goldilocks, some cities are too big, some are too small, and some are just right. So what they did with their analysis was say, and they ranked cities across the country in Australia, and they said, what are these cities that have the infrastructure and the economic assets, but also have incredibly cultural and socially inclusive communities that gives us this incredible balance? So they looked at cities that weren't too far away from metropolitan capitals and had all of the benefits that people are looking for when they're looking to live, work, etc. And the number one city in the country was Ballarat.
Yeah.
I'm going to comment. Number two was Geelong. And Wollongong and Newcastle were there in the top 10. So we are interested in talking to Rob about his analysis, because basically the end point of that discussion is that he's saying that governments should be really looking at how we invest far more strategically in these Goldilocks cities, because they're the ones that can help ease population growth pressures on our major capitals, which has obviously been the long journey that the Committee for Geelong has been on around second cities and now gateway cities.
So I can see here you've got a couple of indicators, economic growth and inclusive growth. So Ballarat got number one for economic growth, Geelong got number three, and for inclusive growth, Ballarat four and Geelong two. So inclusive growth, what does that actually mean?
It's a combination of looking at how communities look after each other, and it's about how do we do things like address disadvantage, how do we have a community that makes people feel welcome and included. So I didn't look at Ballarat's in great detail, but obviously in Geelong, you know, we've got a very strong view around how we help support people who have disability. So, you know, there was a fantastic report that came out last year about inclusive and accessible Geelong. We're actually looking at making sure that all parts of our community are recognised, whether it's arts and culture, whether it's our Aboriginal community, and what we're actually doing to make sure that when people come into Geelong, they feel welcome. So inclusivity really is saying that we're not setting ourselves up to make it difficult for people. So my assumption would be that capital cities like Melbourne, it's very hard for people sometimes to buy a house, for example, or to feel as though that they can actually find, you know, the communities that they can connect to easily. And I think that's where the benefit of being slightly smaller than a capital would make you feel like you can find a home and maybe just, you know, integrate yourself into a community a lot easier than a bigger city. So it's a sort of that sense of well-being, welcomeness, and inclusivity can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. But I'm not surprised that, you know, the towns outside major capitals actually have that metric on a higher level than cities, major cities.
And it's interesting that we performed at number 3 for economic growth, because when you talk to people from interstate about Geelong and where you come from, the first thing they often say is, well, you had Ford and Alcoa closed down, how are you going? And they feel like Geelong's almost a dead city, whereas those numbers might say differently.
Well, you know, I think there would have been some pretty interesting data those people could look at, because Geelong not only has maintained its economic growth, it's population growth. So if people think about what economic growth looks like, I mean, you can look at revenue and GDP, but you look at population growth, which is economic growth, and Geelong's been growing faster than Melbourne pre-COVID. And I think there was data in the papers this week that actually says prior to COVID, Geelong's unemployment rate was well below the state average and incredibly healthy, if we can talk about unemployment being healthy. But the economic indicators in Geelong have shown that we've been incredibly resilient over a long period of time. And that perception about Ford and Alcoa, I think, is shifted and has shifted. So in the last month or two, I've seen the Sunday Age write quite regularly about the attraction of people wanting to move to regional Victoria, not just because of COVID, but because of the affordability, the lifestyle. And now we've actually got a significant number of white-collar jobs. So of course, I could go on for a while about this, but Geelong's economic indicators have stacked up over a long period of time, and probably the last 3 or 4 years even more so. And that growth hopefully is set to continue. And I think even in the paper today, it talks about, you know, how Geelong's even, I think it's the house prices, seem to be holding at the moment. So I think Geelong, whether Ballarat and other regional cities have the same story, but I think we're going to be in a far better position than some of the capital cities moving through the COVID pandemic.
Well, any final words of wisdom for our listeners that are staring down the minimum 6-week lockdown, kicking in, of course, from tomorrow night? Any final things that we can perhaps cling on to, some positivity perhaps?
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm the font of all wisdom, but certainly having spoken to people quite regularly, I know people get very zoomed out, you know, you seem to be going from Microsoft Teams to Zoom meetings. And I think it's a couple of things. One is that what I've learnt talking to people who I think are incredibly wise is please just keep some balance in everything that you do. Make sure that, yes, you do get that fresh air when you go out, get yourself into some sunshine, give yourself a bit of a break, because I do think that even though there are tremendous benefits working from home, you need to be able to still spend time where you can get a bit of a mental health break, read a book, spend time where you can, obviously with people who are in your home, but make sure that you get out and have some exercise and keep in touch with those people who really need your support, particularly I've got ageing parents, so we need to make sure. And it's actually my father's 80th birthday today.
Oh,
so
happy birthday.
I know. We're quite sad. It was actually my daughter's 21st last week, so we actually managed to go out for dinner. So we all were able to spend some time together. But, yeah, it's a bit sad tonight. We're just going to be, hopefully we'll be dropping off some food for them and dropping off a gift. But, you know, it makes you really conscious of things that are happening in our community when you can't really have time to spend with your family.
I remember people saying back in April that, oh, we're so sorry for March and April babies. Well, August babies are the new March and April babies, I think.
Yeah. And it's, I spoke to my father yesterday, so I think, you know, it's sort of the situation we're in and we've all just got to deal with it. But I think we just need to make sure we keep in touch and we talk really openly about what we're feeling about. And sometimes a brave face isn't what's needed. It's actually a You know, being honest with people about what you're going through and just asking for help if you need it.
Thought-provoking stuff. Thanks for being on the program. We'll talk to you again next month.
Oh, Mitchell, thank you. And it sounds like it'll still be on the phone, won't it?
Yeah, I think it'll be for a long time yet. I've got a feeling. Thanks, we'll see what happens. Thank you very much.
I hope you're okay too.
Yes, I'm doing all right. Thank you. Jennifer Cromarty there, the CEO of the Committee for Geelong.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.